You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. It's time now for another sight loss story, and I'm joined by Bob Coote from just outside Chester. Bob, thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon.
Now, Bob, you lost your sight later in life. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I did. Totally unknown to me. As you know, as you're getting older, you often think about what's going to happen to you, illnesses and things later in life. I never for one minute thought about blindness. I had a career. I was 33 years as a policeman, and I specialised in anti-terrorism protection. And I did another 12 years then after I left the police, working in the Middle East and Far East, working as an anti-terrorist consultant. And then one day, I just suddenly realised something's not quite right. Goes to the doctor, and before you know it, you've got advanced glaucoma. And then I actually lost full sight of one eye, and I've just got a little bit of long vision left in my left eye. I just never envisaged something like that happening, really.
Were there signs, sort of looking back now, did you think that there were any signs before that diagnosis that you had problems?
No, because that's probably one of the issues. A little bit of, I wouldn't say my own fault, but when I was, for years I was a firearms officer and I dealt with explosive devices and things like that, and my eyes were spot on, so I never ever thought there were any problems with my eyes, and I didn't need glasses either. And it was only when I was sent for a consultation, when I started losing the sight, that they started asking me all these questions, have you had this, have you had double vision, headaches, and the answer was no to everything, because I literally did not have any symptoms whatsoever.
So that must have come as quite a big shock then. I understand you had some surgery then on the eye.
Right.
But that wasn't successful.
Yeah, right. What happened, as you're probably aware, so many people have glaucoma, and you actually, you don't die of glaucoma, you die with it, and so to speak. And yes, I went on drops, and I started on drops for 12 months or so. And it was only after a few visits and multiple changes of drops, I realised that they're not controlling this. And that's when they said this, we'll have to go to surgery. Now, with the surgery, and don't ask me to pronounce the operation, begins with a T. I had the surgery, and like all surgery, there's a risk involved. And they did the first eye. And then they leave it 12 months before they do the second eye, obviously. Now, the first eye, they did the surgery. You know, obviously I had to wear an eye patch for a couple of weeks until they got my sight back. And that was okay, apart from it didn't really bring the pressure down too much, but it was acceptable. But when they did the second eye, 12 months on, I went into theatre, albeit with high pressure, I could see. And I came out of theatre, and after a day or two, they realised I was totally blind in that eye. And apparently it's something to do with when the surgeon cuts into a diseased eye, the optic nerve spikes so quick you don't know about it, and you don't get it back. It is rare, but it does happen, and it happened to me. I think I faced a double whammy, really, because I see that I was lucky for 50-odd years with a wonderful marriage, wonderful career, and all of a sudden, all this happened in a five-year period. The sight loss went first, and my wife became my eyes. And then once she died, I was devastated. So it was two blows within a five-year thing. But I think the thing is, don't lie down at all. You must get up and fight.
In those early days then, following the surgery and following the sight loss, what were some of the challenges that you started to face?
All my life. All my working life and my occupation and my leisure, I spent 40 odd years walking in the mountains and road biking. I've done all the big peak challenges and all the certificates and everything. So walking was my life, and cycling, I had a road bike and I had a hybrid bike, and I had a 50 year lovely marriage. My wife didn't bother about all my pursuits. And also, of course, and I had a motor. When in our retirement, we had a small motorhome. When I actually lost my, I knew I had to pack in. So I didn't think about packing in walking or cycling at the time, but I knew the driving was an issue. In fact, when I got that letter, when I lost my driving license, we actually had a motorhome, which was very frustrating for me at the time. I had to go. But regarding the walking and the cycling, yes, I did have to really cut down on that, because fortunately I was with a crowd of colleagues who we've done it for years together, so they were helping me. But it was like everywhere I was walking, I had someone holding my arm, and it was getting a bit frustrating for me, really. So I stopped going in the mountains. I just kept sort of on sort of distance on the flats. And then I worked out myself then, with the little sight I've got in my left eye, and with it being long vision, I was able to pinpoint on the path 30, 40 yards ahead of me that it was clear. And I walked to that. And when I got to it, I couldn't see it, and then so on, until you'd done a mile then. And in my case, on my challenges, I did 150 miles. But in the last few years, going with the same guys who've been on the mountains with, we now go on mountains, but I keep it to about 2,000 feet, something like Movama, and I either strap to the arm and just walk, basically getting dragged up. I don't really like that method because, you know, things can go wrong. The best method we've got is that they just chalk me up, basically. Left foot here, right foot there. It takes longer, but do it.
And you mentioned some of the big challenges you've done. You've done quite a big one recently, have you?
The one I've just completed a couple of days ago, Maggie's Cancer Support, and the one we went to when my wife was ill was Clatterbridge. And I did it last year. They did this challenge last year, walked 300,000 steps, which is 150 miles. I'd missed the zero off the end. I thought I was only going to do 15 miles last year when I signed up, but I had a fundraising page and the money started coming in, so I knew I had to do it. But basically, I did this last year, this challenge, and I did the 150 miles, and I raised over £1,000. So I thought it was a one-off, but they've asked me, would I try it this year? So I've just completed it last week. I've done the 150 miles again, and this time I've just got around the £1,000 mark. And basically what I did, I just did 10 miles a day on a place called the Wirral Way here, which is a disused railway line. A walk was paradise, really. I did it on the flat, but I also involved some of my colleagues, and we did Malvama a couple of times. So, yes, I completed that last week.
And you're very active, you say, and you'd like to keep busy, obviously. How does that help you?
I think tremendously in all aspects, really, because I think my wife passed away 2 years ago, and I think I could have rolled over then after a 50-year marriage. I could have rolled over, but I didn't, so I kept going. I've always been an advocate of physical fitness, a bit fanatical in some ways years ago with all the squash and running and everything. I think the fitness, the fact that when I started doing these walks and not being able to see where I was going, I just found that I'm 74 now, but my fitness is very good. And I just thought that the physical fitness has played its part, to be honest. And state of mind.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you mentioned sort of the mindset of rolling over there. Have you got any advice for listeners who may be just starting their sight loss journey, who may be tempted to roll over?
Yeah, certainly don't think negative. That's what one thing, don't think negative. I was given some advice, actually, by a guy who's a blind chef, ex-military man. I chat with him quite regularly. And he said to me, it's surprising what you can do with a white stick and a mouth. So I'm not afraid to ask anything if I'm out or about. I have the white stick, and I keep near to the wall and everything else. I've investigated everything what's available for us. And the two things issues I have, I didn't want to stop any travelling because I've got a daughter who lives in New Zealand. And I'm registered for assistance on both travelling by air and travelling by train. And I've got to give the railways a bit of a boost here, because I went down to South Wales recently and I was met at Lime Street Station in Liverpool by a member of staff who put me on the train, put me on the seat, put my case in, and every time it went to a changeover station, someone was there at the exact place, and it was marvellous. So I think ask for everything what you think you can get.
Well, Bob Coote, thanks very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio and sharing your sight loss story with us.
Okay, you're welcome.